On Friday, we had a report on the news about the winter plan that is being implemented by the HSC and also the Community Health Organisation in the Northwest, taking Donegal along with the other border counties and counties in this region. And among the issues raised in it was the sanctioning of the recruitment of four additional emergency medicine consultants for Letterkenny University Hospital this winter, and also a commitment that there would be more cooperation between SAILTHE, the HSC and the Community Health Organisation with a view toward reducing the amount of people coming to the acute hospital, reducing the amount of people in A&E, reducing the amount of admissions and increasing the number of people that are being treated in the community and in primary care settings. I'm joined on the line by Tony Canavan, who is the CEO of the SAILTHE University Healthcare Group. Tony, good morning.
Good morning, Donald.
Tony, would it be fair to say that perhaps the most important phrase in that document that was published on Friday was admittance avoidance?
I think the most important phrase was the one that you emphasised yourself around cooperation or joint working between all of the various arms of the health services. And you've mentioned the hospital, of course, Letterkenny University Hospital plays a key role and will play a key role this winter. But so too do all of the community-based services, including general practitioner services and HSE services in the community. And in addition to that, the ambulance services also play a key role, as do public health. So for me, the key phrase really around the winter plan is that joint working or cooperation of all the various arms of the health services coming together to try and focus on the demands that will be placed upon us.
It's long been a point of discussion that too often there are people in the hospital or at the hospital that do not need to be there, that should be there, and in an ideal world they would be treated somewhere else. Now, I remember when the Regional Health Forum had its very first meeting at Merlin Park in Galway. I attended that meeting. At the time, the HSC wasn't long formed. Brendan Drum was the CEO of the HSC at the time. He addressed that meeting. I interviewed Brendan Drum after that meeting, and what he said to me was, my aim is to get people out of the hospitals and into the community. It seems to me that that still remains the aim, and we haven't quite got there yet in terms of achieving that goal.
It absolutely is the aim, and you're quite right. We haven't got there yet. We just haven't made the kind of progress over the last 10 years or more since the HSC was formed around that move or that shift. But I do think we took a big step forward in 2017 with the publication of Sláintecare. So your listeners will be familiar with that. That's our 10-year plan for the development of the health services. And one of the key provisions of that plan is the shift of care, inappropriate care that's currently taking place in hospitals, and shifting it to the community. There's a particular focus on a number of areas to start with. So care of older people is one of the areas that we focus on. Cardiology, diabetes, these are other areas that we'll be focusing on as well. So chronic disease management, a greater proportion of that will take place in the community than is currently the case. And that will make a big difference to the hospitals over the winter period.
The recruitment of four new emergency consultants for LUH, obviously very, very important, and also recruitment right across the sector, both within the hospital and within the primary care setting. One of the things we're being told is that recruitment at this point in time can be difficult, particularly in terms of getting people to counties like Donegal. What is SAILTHE doing to make Donegal and Letterkenny more attractive to people to come here? And is it getting easier from your point of view to actually recruit the staff you need into the hospital and into other care settings?
I think we've seen some improvement on that front. There's still a lot of work to do, of course, but I think we've seen some improvement. So if we take nursing, which is a very large, very important workforce within the hospital, we've done well in terms of nursing recruitment, both internally within the country, but also we've done some international recruitment, and that has been successful in bringing people into the hospital. We've also done very well within the hospital in retaining nurses. In fact, Letterkenny does very well. Once people are established there, they tend to stay much more so than they would in other hospitals, for example. So that's also a good indicator of the hospital. In some of the departments within the hospital, we've done well at consultant recruitment, and others we still have work to do. So, for example, in terms of the emergency department, we recently had held interviews for emergency department consultants, and we'll be making appointments on foot of that. And as you just said, we've now got four additional consultant approvals for consultant appointments, and we'll be attempting to fill those as well. I do think that we've, as I say, we've made some progress, but there are still areas, for example, in obstetrics and and gynaecology, where we have where we still have some work to do to fill vacant posts there as well. And I think for Letterkenny, that'll be a work that'll be ongoing. You know, that we must continue to make it an attractive place for people to go and work. That they see that professionally, it's somewhere that they can do their work to a high standard. That they're working with good colleagues and they're providing good care into the community. And that's what our focus on, is on.
I want to focus on the emergency department for a moment, because, and I want to take you back a couple of years. Back in 1996, I had a very bad dose of salmonella. I went to my GP. My GP looked at me and said, you need to go to hospital. My GP made two phone calls and said to me, be on such and such a ward at 2 o'clock this afternoon. I went to the hospital with my pyjamas in my bag. I went straight to the ward and I was admitted onto the ward and I was in a bed by 3 o'clock. If that were to happen now, I would have to go to the emergency department. Are we not at the point where everyone, because everyone that is being admitted to the hospital for whatever reason, whoever refers them, wherever they're coming from, everyone's got to go into the emergency department. So we are creating a logjam in an emergency department. And I would suggest in many cases, there are people in the ED that really don't need to be there, but they're there because that's the only place they can go. Can that not be addressed in terms of getting other ways of admitting people, or even go back to the days of allowing a GP ring a ward and effectively admit a patient directly on their own word?
Yeah, so I think actually the point that you raise is a really important one. We need to be careful that we take a balanced view of it, though. So first of all, what I would say is that that we are developing alternative routes into hospital for patients, and that's working with GPs. So, for example, the acute medical assessment unit is a route into hospital for patients, and it avoids the admission through the emergency department. It's more appropriate for those patients, and again, as I say, it's done in partnership with GPs. So that's a route that works well. I think one of the other areas, you know, when we look at the integrated care program for older people as well, again, what we're trying to do is to provide an alternative for GPs. So again, you know, not too many years ago, the only option that was open to a GP when a 75-year-old man presented and the GP was concerned about him, the only option that he had really was to refer him into the emergency department for he'd then subsequently probably be admitted to a bed after a period of time. But now we're reaching out into the community, and it's now possible for GPs to make referrals to the integrated care program for older people. And so, you know, the concern that the GP has can be dealt with in other ways, and maybe that patient will remain at home in their own, in their own home or in residential care for longer without having to be admitted to a hospital. So I agree with you, but we need to be careful that we do it in a measured way. We do need to find alternative routes and pathways for patients, but they have to be ones that are organised and structured so that we make best use of the limited hospital beds that we have.
A caller has made a very interesting comment. They've said, it seems to me that back in the old days, all we had was pieces of paper. It seemed to be more streamlined and more efficient then than it is now, when theoretically everything is on computer. So you should be able to look at a patient's. Now, I know there was talk about a patient medical record, and there was questions over GDPR and questions over privacy and the extent to which that could be shared. But a caller saying it seemed in the old days, when everything was done by telephone calls and bits of paper, it was more efficient than it is now, when we supposedly have everything electronic and we can transfer information and transfer details from one computer to another.
And again, I do agree to some extent, but having said that, I do think that that medicine has changed. And so, you know, clinical decisions aren't made on the basis of, you know, they're made on the basis of maximum amount of information that can be made available at any time. So, you know, when a patient presents, what we like to do is to make sure that the clinician, the doctor, the nurse, whoever it is, they have the right information at that time in order to be able to make the best clinical decision that they can. And that could be a decision to admit a patient to hospital, or to maybe to say that it's okay for them to stay at home, or to refer them to some other clinic, you know, but that decision should be made on the best possible information, and really use of technology is the only way to make sure that that's possible.
In terms of GPs, at the moment we're hearing a lot from people who are saying they're just finding it difficult to get through to the GP surgery, and in the post-COVID scenario we still have a situation where many GPs do not operate a walk-in service which would have been operated before COVID hit, so we have people trying to ring a GP, maybe having difficulty getting through to the GP. Is that creating part of the problem in terms of people are going to the ED because they can't get through to their GP? And is your plan to recruit a GP liaison nurse going to cut through some of those issues, if that is indeed a problem?
So the short answer to that is yes, and of course the reason for it is because all arms of the health service, including general practitioners, are extremely busy right now. I think what we've seen in our emergency department since the start of this year in Letterkenny is that the number of patients attending is way in excess of what it would have been in 2019, and of course that means that it's even more in excess of what it was in 2020 and 2021. But if the emergency department is busy, so too are GPs in the community, extremely busy now. So I think all arms of the health service are under pressure. In that context, it's really important then that there be good communication taking place between our emergency department and Letterkenny University Hospital and the GPs in the community. And that's where the GP liaison nurse that you referred to comes in, so that we maintain that connection, that human connection between those two really important parts of the health service. So we're pleased that approval came through for us in the winter plan, and it'll be an important part of our response to the winter pressures.
And in terms of the development of primary care centres across the community in Donegal, we've had reports, and it's great to see primary care centres opening in places like Newton Cunningham and so on, where there are now very many services, be they occupational therapy, be they physiotherapy, be they x-ray or whatever, even in some cases minor injury assessment, that can actually take place in the community. From your point of view, how important is it that we see that network of primary care centres across the community increased and have even more services located to them, so that effectively when we can achieve that goal of having someone, if they have a fall and they need an x-ray, they don't necessarily need to go to Letterkenny University Hospital. They can go to a primary care centre in Newton. They can go to a primary care centre in Carndonagh. They can go to a primary care centre in Raphoe, wherever it happens to be.
I think that's really important. It's important for the sustainability of our services, but obviously and of course it's also important for patients to be able to access that type of care closer to where they're living, closer to where they're working, closer to where the incident occurs. I think that's really, really important, as I say, both for the services and for patients. And we also, and going back to the point that you made at the start, Donald, you know, we know that right now in all of our hospitals, in Letterkenny Hospital, there are patients that have respiratory illnesses, there are patients that have chronic disease such as cardiology disease or diabetes and so on, that could receive a significant proportion of their care in the community, and that it would not alone would it be more efficient to do that, but it would be better for the patients as well. I think it's a really important development. We need to continue to invest in community services, not just the physical infrastructure, but the staff that are required then to deliver the services afterwards, so that as much as we can, that we deliver care to people close to where they're living, and deliver it to them appropriately in those locations. And that way then our hospital becomes used for what it's really intended, the most acute patients, for the most acute care.
There have been plans before, there have been waiting list initiatives before, there have been strategies before, as I say, going right back to when the HSC was first formulated, and this certainly isn't the first ride on the rodeo in terms of trying to get a plan that's going to look at things like emergency department overcrowding, long waiting lists and so on and so forth. We have a situation at the moment, and the INMO is warning about this, that they say we're hitting crisis situations once again in the EDs on the day last week that they had the highest number registered right across the country. The Letterkenny University Hospital on that day was the joint third highest in the country, along with St James's in Dublin. So it seems that notwithstanding what you are doing, and notwithstanding what, you know, changes have been made over the past number of months and years, the fact is we still are, and every week or so, every 2 weeks maybe, in the newsroom here, we get a statement from the HSC, and I could almost write that statement myself. It'll say, Letterkenny University Hospital is very busy at the moment. Yesterday we had, and it's usually in around about 130, 140 people in the emergency department, plus we have two stroke, three wards affected by COVID-19. And it seems that statement, you could almost issue the same statement every 2 weeks and just change the number appropriately. So it seems at best at the moment we're running to standstill.
And actually, I think the context for this winter plan is really important as well, because we know that the population is increasing. We know that the population is also aging. We know that because of those shifts, there are increased demands on our hospitals. As I said earlier on, we can see clearly that the numbers of patients attending the emergency departments across the country, but also in Letterkenny specifically, the numbers are at a much higher level than they have been in the past number of years, and that's translated translating into greater numbers of admissions into hospitals. So as the IMO had pointed out, and they're correct, the numbers of patients awaiting admission on trolleys is at worryingly high levels, there's no question about that. And we're just at the very start of November, so the worst of the winter is yet to come. So running to standstill, actually, we need to start changing the way that we're approaching this. And we have started that process, but I think we need to accelerate that change. Because there is, if we continue to do things in the way that we have done over the last number of years, the hospital service will not be able to sustain that kind of pressure. The health services won't be able to sustain that kind of pressure. So we do have to change. And that's why, I suppose, this investment that's coming with the winter plan, $169 million across the country, and a significant portion of that going into the Northwest, I think that will make a difference. It will help, but we need to build on that and to continue to invest in the health services, and particularly to direct that investment where it's most needed right now, which is in the community, actually, and to try and make sure that patients get that care close to where they're living, as opposed to the only option being for them to turn up at the hospital.
The late Sir Gerry Robinson, who lived in Donegal for many years ago, was involved in a health authority in the UK. It may have been Cheshire, I can't recall. But one of the things, he overhauled it in the space of a couple of weeks, and one of the things he did was he broke the culture of 9 to 5 scans and tests, and actually got tests done out of hours, early in the morning, late in the evening, and indeed a couple of callers. One caller is saying, when is the hospital system going to operate on a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week basis instead of only carrying out scans and tests from 9 to 5? Another caller is saying, my aunt is in hospital for the past 9 days. She's taking up a bed because she is waiting on a scan. This seems to be the new way of working. They daren't send her home, because if they send her home, it could take weeks or months to get her back in to get that scan. So she is taking up a bed waiting for a scan. If we were to get to a situation where even you added 2 hours in the morning and 3 hours in the evening, and instead of going 9 to 5, you went 7 to 8 or 7 to 9, would that not help in terms of getting people in and out of the hospital? Because so many people, and I hate the phrase bed blockers, which was one that was used in the past, and it's a phrase that I said that for illustrative purposes, and I would refuse to use that phrase on an ordinary basis, because it seems to be putting a blame on the patient that should not be there. But we do have a situation, it seems, still in many cases, where people are in hospital beds that don't necessarily need to be there. They're just there because they're waiting for a test, and the authorities daren't send them home, because if they send them home, they mightn't get them back in again.
I would say I agree with you, Donal, to some extent, but at the same time, I think we need to take a fairly balanced view of it. So first of all, what I would say is, when we look at the hospital structure, the infrastructure that's there, if you take the theatres or the radiology department where the x-rays are done, or the laboratory where the lab tests are done and so on, that's a very significant infrastructure, and it is used extensively over a 12-hour period, which is probably the best way to describe it. Usually between 8 o'clock in the morning and 8 p.m. in the evening is used extensively over those periods. I do think there's an argument to be made that we should be extending it beyond that, and getting more out of that that asset outside of those hours. But of course, to do that, you must have staff to do it. And while the hospital is now better staffed than it was 12 months ago, and we've invested in additional radiography and laboratory staff at the hospital in order to really, extend the hours of working, to maybe a shift pattern through the night or whatever, that would require additional staff. There's no question about that. And just to reassure any patient or anybody that uses the hospital service, of course there is a 24/7 service for the laboratory and the radiology service available throughout, in all of our hospitals. But outside of core hours, that's available on an on-call basis as opposed to on a routine basis. So patient care isn't interrupted, but at the same time, it can at times, and we know that it can at times, lead to delays in hospital beds. And again, going back to a point that you made earlier on, Donald, I think part of what we need to do is to make sure that we have alternatives. So you were describing, the availability of x-ray in primary care centres. That's a really important alternative. In the past, the only option for a GP would be to refer that person into the hospital. If that person can get their x-ray and the GP can get the assurance or the information that he needs in order to be able to make a decision in the community, that's better.
The other concern, of course, is the number of GPs that are out there. We know that some areas are losing GPs. We know that some practices are short of GPs. Some practices find it impossible to get locums in when their GP goes on leave or whatever. And a caller is asking, you know, can we get to a point where we have more GPs in the community? Because populations are rising, there are people coming into the community, and there aren't enough GPs to cover that. And that's part of the problem too, that maybe in some cases the hospital is unfairly being seen as sort of the locus and the centre of healthcare provision, when maybe what should be the locus and centre of healthcare provision is the GP service, but there aren't enough GPs out there to provide that service effectively. Those that are out there are doing an absolutely phenomenal job and they're being worked off their feet. And what they need more than anything else is colleagues and more people working in that system.
Yeah, I agree with that, and I agree that Donegal is very, very well served for the GPs that it has, and we value, in the hospital, we value that connection or that communication that takes place between ourselves and the GPs, and indeed we need to continue to work on that basis so that we do the best that we can for our patients. What I would say for sure is that we don't have enough of GPs. I think that's absolutely true. I think we struggle with the recruitment of GPs to vacancies in rural counties like Donegal, so West and North Donegal, similar to West Mayo, similar to West Galway. When vacancies arise through retirements and so on, it proves difficult to fill those vacancies. We are increasing the numbers of GPs that are coming off the training schemes, but I think we do need to take a particular approach to try and develop general practice in those remote locations, including our islands, for example. And I think that we're going to see an increased difficulty in recruiting GPs to those types of locations unless we take a special approach.
Tony Canavan, CEO of the Sylt University Healthcare Group, thanks indeed for speaking to us this morning.